This is a take for Daisy Stokes at Kiss the Ox Valley. So we'd love to hear about when you arrived, Daisy, and all that in the Kiss the Ox Valley.
Well, we arrived in Kiss the Ox Valley in August 1954.
And I suppose, could you tell about this place, what it was like? And, I suppose it was already built.
Well, the log house was here, and it was pretty dilapidated. It had nearly every window shot out of it, and the cows had been in, and there was holes in the floor, and the brush was right to the door. It looked pretty bleak. Actually.
So of course that's the first thing you have to do is clean it up. Yeah.
That's what we had to do. I had to put a new roof on it and put the windows in. Sawed pieces out of the floor and put the new pieces in.
So your living was more or less made living farming?
Yes, we've made a living farming pretty well. We did some sawmilling here. We had the sawmill going, sold some lumber. But we've pretty well lived off this place since we came here. Yes.
And the big item with our discussion with you is your beautiful hobbies and all the things. Start with your gorgeous things outside. Your flower boxes and just any little comments on your...
Well, there was nothing here in the yard when we came except that one big white lilac bush. And all the rest here, I've planted everything here. And the little birds that I have out there were made from the knobs from the jack pine. Trees that grow on the branches, put them together. And the burl is that I have for a flower pot is a birch burl from a big birch tree. And the other things are just made from the natural wood.
Your outdoor stove is something. Did you just invent
it? Well, that was just more or less invented. Keith helped make that. And I do the canning on it. I've done the canning. We made birch syrup every year on that outside, and except last year and this year.
Would you like to mention how you make the birch syrup?
Well, first you have to drill the little holes in the trees and put a tap in, or a tube.
A certain amount, I guess.
Yes, it's a small... Oh, I really don't know how big it is. About a quarter. About a quarter inch tube you put in. We have a steel tube we put in.
And that's a certain month particularly?
Well, that's from the, when the sap starts to run. Just when the first hot days come and the buds are starting to come out, then you can tap from then on until the leaves are on. After that, the sap gets dull color, a dark color.
And then how do you prepare it once you have the sap?
Well, we collect it. And then we boil it down. We put it on the stove in a big kettle and boil it until it boils down. It turns to a brown color.
Well, is it sweet?
Yes, it's sweet.
It is.
When you take, you can drink it right from the tree, and you taste it sweet. It's
so
clear.
You don't add any sugar.
No, we don't add anything to it.
Oh, okay. Well, how do you use it?
Well, we use it. We use it for pancakes. It's good. It's syrup for pancakes. Or I use it for molasses and baking.
And you've provided your birch syrup every year?
Every year.
How much would you get for your community?
Well, the most that I have made is about 7 or 8 quarts. That's the most I've made. Because it takes a lot of sap.
How much sap would you get?
It takes at least 40 gallons of sap for a gallon of syrup. 40 gallons of sap for a gallon.
Oh. It has to evaporate mm-hmm. that much.
Yeah.
And yet you can drink it just straight from the tree.
Mm-hmm.
It's
sweet, too, from the tree. You can taste the sweetness in it right from the tree.
It would ferment, it would spoil.
If it sits out, it'll ferment. Huh?
You can freeze it or put it in a...
Well, I suppose you could freeze it.
And just drink it, and then just let it go.
But I make a drink from it. We bottle it. And you put it in the bottles with a piece of lemon, and you leave it sit 3 days without the caps, and then you cap it, same as you would beer.
So that's just raw,
mm-hmm.
right from the tree?
Yeah, right from the tree. And then you leave it, 6 weeks or 2 months, and it's like sort of like a soft drink. You don't put sugar. You can put sugar with it if you want, but we don't put sugar. But you don't put sugar in it until after you open it.
But you do put sugar after.
You can.
Oh.
Yes, you can, but we don't.
It said that the birch sap is the best tonic you can have in the spring. I've heard this say.
Well, it could be, because it's... we like it, anyway. I like it. I like the birch syrup.
Oh,
I really like
the birch syrup. Well, that's very interesting, because I missed that time. Mrs. Lindsay had a little thing.
Oh, yes, she had some.
And I was busy looking after mm-hmm. the children, so I never got around to it. So anyway, and you mentioned that you went on to, you went on to the knit. Well, I guess you were telling us about the carder. You can start in any part of the...
Well, the carding, as I say, the first time I done that type of wool was in 1939 in Terrace. We lived in Terrace. And we didn't have any work. And then, of course, we ran out of clothes. So I had some wool, and I decided I would just tease it out by hand and knit socks for art, so I did.
And that's when I started
doing that. And then, of course, I didn't do much of that in Paris because we lived in town and that. But after we came here, I decided, well, I would try that again. Because I was always interested in working with wool or doing anything like that by hand. So I did. And I carded it out by hand. At first, I teased it out by hand and then knit it. My first sweaters.
You mentioned about the carder that was sent to you.
And the hand carder was given to me from a man in Saskatchewan. And that carder had been in his granary for 40 years. But he had never touched it. He never used it. So it had been there, left by pioneers that had that place before him. He bought it from the pioneers. Then I used that until this last winter, Becky and I bought the drum carder together.
Oh, that's what it's called, drum carder.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see.
And then, of course, that's a big improvement. Makes the little dats that you can do anything.
And I suppose it doesn't, well, particularly makes quilt making just a pleasure.
Oh, yeah.
It's been really hard to make quilts at one time. We had to just tear it pretty well by hand.
Oh, yes, you had to tease it out. Well, the little hand carders, I could do it out, mm-hmm. but it was so slow, you see, you got such a little, just a little piece, like that.
And
this way. Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting. And then, of course, you told us, all your natural dyes. I think we've got to hear about them all over again.
Well, I'll have to get you that list.
You're not a knitter, Carl?
Oh, I can.
You can, yes.
Well, I use the strawberry blight with this peachy color. And I use tomato leaves. They don't make a very good dark green, though.
But it's so pretty.
And the carrot tops are actually the prettiest green. They're that mild green. And the red beet tops make a bit of a yellowy color. And the yellow beet tops make a different color. And the garlic skins, if you use a lot of them, they make a beautiful brown. And in a weak solution of them, they make a lighter beige color. And the onion skins give the bright yellow.
That's really thin, yeah.
And the tails, are onion, green onion tails, are a nice green, light green. And the mountain ash berry, if you use a lot of them, it's real peach color. Otherwise, it's a faded, more of a faded color. And the rhubarb leaves in the summer are a dark green, almost a brown green. Olive green, I'd say. And in the fall, they're a lighter green, which is kind of hard to understand.
It
really
is, isn't it? I guess it's the
different chemicals, I guess.
Yeah,
probably.
The green. They're losing the heavy green, I guess.
And the beard moss from the trees make a, if you use a light, weak solution of it, it's a light yellow and goldy color, I guess it is gold. If you use more, it's a dark gold. And the tea is sort of a brown, browny beige, I guess.
Really
I don't know.
Pretty, isn't it?
And the turmeric, this is turmeric, and it's yellow. It's a light yellow. But actually, the onion skins, I think, are the nicest yellow.
Well, they are, you know, even the Indians, you know, they speak about onion skins all the time.
And the garlics. And I haven't tried the wild garlics. These are my tame garlics from the garden. But I haven't tried the wild garlics yet. We have wild garlics on the hill that we gather every year.
And do you use them?
And they're good, yes. They're really good.
And so then, of course, you use the commercial dyes, too.
Yes, I've used the commercial dyes, but just... Oh, I don't knit much with the commercial dyes because I really don't like knitting with the dyed wool because it dries it out when you boil it.
Oh,
it takes
I see.
All that
well, these
that
you don't
oil.
Have to boil.
I don't know, it doesn't seem to do the same with these. It doesn't seem to dry the wool out the same as the chemical.
Oh, yeah, the chemical would dry
I think
oh,
that seems to
oh,
dry
sure.
it out more.
Sure it would. Mm-hmm. Well, they're prettier. Well, they're far prettier. They're much superior. And so you went on to say about all the things you made out of your wool. We just remember you had all kinds of things here.
Well, I've made sweaters, socks, mitts, toques, one blanket, and what else? Baby sits. Oh, I've made handbags.
Oh, yeah.
And handbags.
And then you used your goat. It was a domestic goat, wasn't it?
Yes, I used
you made a vest.
I've made three vests from the domestic goats. Two spotted ones and one white one. Oh. And I have a marten collar, wild marten collar on one, and fox collars, wild fox collars on two.
Yes, Miss Lindsay was asking me about that. I couldn't remember. That's beautiful. And oh yes, the gloves. Yes.
And the gloves are from the goats. The one I showed you was from goats, but I've made them from the sheep. The sheep make really lovely soft
Do
leather.
Really?
Yeah, really soft leather. But the goat has the endurance. It wears, really wears well.
And that's just plain domestic goat.
Mm-hmm.
Then you showed us the patch quilts.
Yes, I made the patch quilts. And the braided rugs.
Yes. Yes. And then, your other hobbies, of course, took our eyes. All your, it was right in front of your door. Right coming in, remember?
Oh, my bell.
The bell.
The bell post with the bells on.
Were they just your own bells, just from here?
Yes, they're bells we gathered.
Mm-hmm. And then
some of them we had on the goats, some on the cows.
And then you made a basket. Oh yes, that's in the house or something. A basket out of a hollow tree.
Yes, I have the basket.
And then
from the hollow tree, and I have those, well, I don't know what you would call them. Wooden vases, I guess. Those are from the cottonwood. Right there, that, mm-hmm. there, and this one here. Yeah. And that one, and this one around the corner here that I really like.
The one that you made out of the hollow tree, there were just certain special things you did with it.
Well, I decorated it with nutshells and
rocks,
and I put a handle. That's a natural bird handle on it. Looks like a bird. And there's holly wood on it. The yellow wood is holly wood, and the green that I use for leaves is green. Willow, rotten willow. That's what it is.
Mm.
And I have one eucalyptus leaf on it that I got from California.
Well, how did you treat the leaves?
Oh, I just glued it on.
Oh, just glued it on?
I just glued it on, and then they're stiff.
Is that?
They're hard.
You didn't dip it in wax?
No, I varnished over top of them.
Oh, I see.
I varnished over top.
Yeah, that's what gives it that you're
mm-hmm. That gives it that gloss.
Mm-hmm. And then your ocean shells, you mentioned about them.
Yes, I picked those in the Pacific Ocean myself, down there in Vancouver Island. And I made that display on the door.
Oh, that's just beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the children were really fascinated by your pickled things, you know. You told us the story about the circumstances of the little birds and the little...
Oh! That's the little snakes and the birds from the eggs. Well, the eggs fell out of the tree before they were hatched. And we found them, so we put them in that alcohol. And the snakes were run over on the road, so we pickled them too in the alcohol.
That's really fantastic. And I can't think. What else can we? What suggestions would you make for young people wanting to go into home craft? Say, if you were had a chance, you know, to give somebody, say you were put in charge of teaching or anything, you know, what would you suggest for young people that would be very worthwhile for them to learn? Besides everything.
Well, I really don't know.
I suppose
you can do so many things from things that are wasted. I mean, like the quilts and the rugs, and that you can utilize that and make something nice out of it, otherwise it'll go to waste. And the same as wool, if they like working with wool, it's work, it's all work. It doesn't cost that much, it's the time, that's all.
Yes, it's time consuming.
It's the time. Mm-hmm.
And it's very sad.
But you really don't have to have much money. You don't have to have hardly any money to do that type of work. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing
it. And I guess you've had a very rewarding experience with all these things. Besides the fact that it's brought a little bit of money too. Of course, I mean
Well, I like doing it. That's the main thing. I like doing that type of work. I like doing it.
I know you told.
That's why I do it. There's something there. There's a challenge to make something out of nothing.
And you mentioned that... you did mention all the things you made. Like in one season, that's right. We were kind of asking you, like in one season,
well,
a couple of seasons.
Now, like last year, I think it was 20 pair of socks on it. And I, the odd took or two, but last winter I didn't sell one sweater. Last winter. But some winters I sold as many as 6 sweaters. But then they last a long time. Mm-hmm. And some winters I haven't sold any socks.
So that's the way it
goes. It's yeah. But I've never advertised them for sale or that. It's only through people seeing them and asking for them that I sell them. I've never advertised them. I've put them on display in Hazleton here once at the craft show this spring.
And did they drop, I suppose?
And only because they wanted me to display them. So I did. I put them in on display. No, I didn't sell any.
It's actually the word of mouth is the best advertising on
and seeing them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I sent some down to the Vancouver to that Circle Craft. The sale in, when was that? In the Christmas, before Christmas. Some of them wanted me to sell. And I sold one pair of socks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but I think that's what we ought to do, to have a couple of samples of the camps and stuff. Would be worthwhile. Well, now let's see. Can you think of anything else? Oh, you said something here about that you, I know, you talked a little bit about in this room. What did you tell us about this room? All the goodies here. And Mr. Stokes, I think, told us something about being in the, adopted by the Frog Clan.
Oh, yes, that was the tale. This is the drum. Came from Kiskegas, just the wood. It was from an old Indian drum. I don't know how many years old, but it was laying there. It hadn't been used for years, and Art put the cowhide, that's from our old Holstein cow, laced that on, and Keith done the drawings, and painted it. That's the Thunderbird and the Frog. Painted it. So that's our little Indian. And of course we've collected this Indian box. This is an authentic Indian box.
Sure,
made from the spit cedar. And that has the
that's a beaver?
Yes, that's the beaver. It has the wooden pegs in it.
Mm-hmm.
And where the pegs were going, it has, after that, when they came with the square nails, it has square nails in it. So that was in 1800 that was made. Anyway, and then we have that little one over there. It's the same type of split cedar. And they make them, they don't make them like this now. They make them from the sawed lumber, and they don't bend the same. See, these are split off. These are split off the great big cedar trees and made different than they make them now.
And then who are the animals here? I suppose. I mean,
this is a lynx cat that Melvin shot when we came here in 1955, I think Melvin shot that. And Gordon done the head. He put the teeth. And that, and the marbles for eyes, and then I've done the rest of it. And this one, I tanned this one and done this one too.
Well, you did your own tanning. Good
for you. Oh, yes, we done our own tanning.
Mm-hmm. Did you tan anything else besides? Oh, well, of course, you do your own tanning for your vests and stuff.
Oh, yes, and we done tanning for leather. Heavy leather. Heavy leather. Yeah. Car has the leather upstairs. It's heavy leather.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And of course, I made these little hats.
One, this one.
This one is Keith's when he went down his correspondence. Took school through correspondence. They had to do different things out of nothing, you know, whatever they had. He made this little hat out of brown paper.
For goodness sake.
And this one is made from brown paper and little bits of Timothy Eaton's catalog cut in pieces.
This is the smallest little box.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is the harness leather.
Mm.
Made heavy leather.
This is the
Oh, that's beautiful.
That was Keith's deer hide, and I tanned that up nicely for him.
You just scrape off the skin and everything. And
oh, yes, you have to soak it till the hair comes off. And another thing about tanning them, you have to leave them soak long enough so that the hair slips off of your hand. It has to, just when you push your hand like that, the way the hair lays, mm-hmm. when you push it like that, it has to come off. Otherwise, they're not ready. It leaves a little bit of skin on it, and it doesn't
work. Water in British Columbia is not good. You put hides in water on the prairies, and hair slips in America for 3 or 4 days.
This is the gold. This is the gold, and I dyed this with just red dye.
Oh, I see.
After I tanned it. After it was tanned, I put it in the red dye. And it tans. It dyes right. It's getting gone now.
So what are you going to? What are you going to do with it?
Well, I haven't decided yet, but I'm just doing this, and I've had it a while yet, but I haven't got around to doing anything with it yet.
I don't tan anymore myself.
Now, this is my buckskin.
Mm.
You see how soft that is? But I haven't got around to smoking it yet.
That's made out of what?
That's sheepskin.
And so what, you might make gloves?
Yes, I might make gloves out of that one.
Gosh, that's good.
So.
What do you use, barrels or something for?
Well, we used the old wooden wash tub at first, but now I use a plastic garbage can because the wooden barrels are too expensive.
And then, what do you put in the water when you're, or is that special stuff that you put in there?
Well, you have to have salt and sulfuric acid and water. That's one tanning. But for the leather that's waterproof, like the harness leather and that deer,
mm-hmm.
you have salt and sulfuric acid, terra japonica, that's a brown substance again, and the water.
What waterproofs it?
The terra japonica. It's a herb or a root from a root, and it does something to it that makes it different. The water doesn't go through it the same.
It must fill in all the gaps.
The pores probably does something to it. It doesn't soak up the water the same.
Oh, yeah, I know. There is This is better. I'd like to hear what you tell about that.
That footstool. That footstool is taken from a part of the log when we cut this door out. We moved the window and we built this on. We had took the window out and there was two logs below the window, and that is the second log from the bottom of the house. That's part of the second log. And that log was hand-hewed in 1912 by John Hagblad, Mrs. Love's brother. And that's just the way it is, the way it was. We just smoothed it a little bit off. That's the broad axe marks on it. And that, and then the legs were from the old heater from Moses McGatt's down near the Kispiox River. He was, I don't know when he lived here. It's a long time before we were here anyway. He'd been dead years when we came.
So he lived here before that?
Yeah, he lived down there towards the Kispiox, not on this place.
Yeah. Oh, because I understand that the headline is supposed to be on the
place.
He was living there in 1912, I guess, because it was his horse and buggy that brought
Anna
Mrs. Love and Mrs. Hag them out here.
Who was that then?
Moses McGatt.
Moses McGatt?
Moses McGatt.
It was an agent.
Oh, I see.